It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Looking for love and cultivating love, these are things humans spend a lot of time doing. So on this day, when we celebrate love, we're going to spend the hour exploring the evolution of dating through the decades. Most of us have been on uncomfortable dates, and uncomfortable dates are, of course, a favorite theme for all kinds of popular culture, like this double date from the classic 1989 romantic comedy When Harry Met Sally. Harry and Sally have each set the other up with a friend, but it turns out that their friends are much more interested in each other.
So, what are we going to order?
Well, I'm going to start with the grilled radicchio.
Jess, Sally is a great order. Not only does she always pick the best thing on the menu, but she orders it in a way that even the chef didn't know how good it could be.
I think restaurants have become too important.
Oh, I agree. Restaurants are to people in the 80s what theater was to people in the 60s. I read that in a magazine.
I wrote that.
Get out of here.
No, I did. I wrote that.
I've never quoted anything from a magazine in my life. That's amazing. Don't you think that's amazing? And you wrote it?
I also wrote Pesto is the quiche of the 80s.
Get over yourself.
I did.
Where did I read that?
New York Magazine.
Sally writes for New York Magazine.
You know, that piece had a real impact on me. I mean, I don't know that much about writing, but...
Look, it spoke to you, and that pleases me.
You have to admire people who can be that articulate.
Nobody has ever quoted me back to me before.
This hour, we are going to talk about how dating has changed through time. But more importantly, we want to hear your stories, how you met your significant other, your worst date ever, what it's like to be back on the dating market after a long time away. You can call us at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And our guide this hour is Emily Wenzel, an associate professor of anthropology and the director of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences International Baccalaureate Program at the University of Iowa. Emily, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. And now, we made a big cultural shift at some point where we as humans decided, at least in Western culture and the culture that we live in the United States, that getting married for love was something we should be doing. That was a huge shift in how people lived, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Romantic love is a historically fairly new concept, and marrying for love particularly so. For the history of humankind, marriage has mostly been about bonding families together over resources, ensuring the production of children, ensuring the economic stability of your community. And it's not always been between two people. There are lots of different ways marriage has been done across time and place. In some places, for example, with ghosts, you might marry a deceased ancestor just to make them part of your lineage. So marriage has looked all sorts of different ways. But romantic love is really the core ideology of what we want a lot as Americans today. Interestingly, we really had this shift from courtship in the U.S., which is a family affair. The two marriage partners are significantly involved, but really it happens in the family home. It's more about vetting a partner for marriage. The family's opinion matters.
Right. Looking for this more ideal partner financially and compatibility from family to family, some things that we don't necessarily want to think about these days.
Yeah. And so this shift, I think, really happened around the 1920s, post-World War I. There are people coming back from these horrors of war, right? There's a big demographic change with a lot of young men being killed in the war. So things are different. It's a time of change. New laws and also new technologies are emerging. We have the confluence of the women's right to vote, right, constitutionally, and the idea of the new woman, right, the flapper of the 20s, that women have new rights. They should be in public space more in different ways. With the confluence of things like prohibition, which ironically, prohibiting drinking legally made for all these new speakeasies and spaces where men and women could mingle in a more egalitarian new way, right? Previously, bars were really these male spaces. But so now you have places created, ironically, by prohibition where people can mingle, the new woman and this new post-war man. We have cars. Right. There's this huge shift in how you can be private together. You're not just on someone's front porch of their house courting the woman who lives there. You're driving in a car together. So there's new opportunities.
Right.
For alone
time.
And
we did structure things so much for so long to keep men and women, and of course we're talking about heteronormative relationships here, but to keep them from being alone together ever without chaperones. So now there is so much privacy available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that takes a change in the material infrastructure of our world as well as our ideas. I should also point out that not all cultural groups in the U.S. see dating or love marriage as a value necessarily. Arranged marriage is a very valid way that people organize their romantic and familial lives, and that's really where the family is the primary driver of choice. And then the marriage partners then have a say. And that also reflects the ideology of romantic love, but the idea is that romantic love will grow based on other forms of compatibility decided by the family. So there's lots of different ways to do dating. I hope to hear about a lot of them. I think one other big change we've seen is technology. I hope we'll hear about people using current technologies and also past technologies. I do want to make the point that we have kind of a bit of hysteria about, like, online dating and apps, they've changed everything. It's all different. It's maybe bad. Technology has always been a huge driver of dating and companionate marriage and romantic love as we know them. I said cars. The telephone was a hugely important invention for these things.
Men and women,
people could talk. Yeah. Video dating. My mother met her late husband on a video dating service, right, where you would record a video, VHS, and then other people would watch your video and see if they wanted to see it. Online dating and apps now have obviously had a huge importance for dating, and they've really become normative. The Pew Research Center study done in 2019 found that 1 in 3 adults have used online dating. But the numbers are really higher for younger people, 48% of 18 to 29-year-olds. And they're also really high for lesbian, gay, and bisexual adults, 55% of that population. So if you're part of a smaller demographic or one that's more spread out in space, you might be more likely to use these tools. And also if you're a younger person who's just used to being on
digital
apps more,
native,
yeah,
right.
You might use them.
Well, it is interesting. I have already heard several stories from people, and I'll share a few here. Why don't I just share a story, and then we can talk about this. But this is from a listener in Iowa City who said that she met her husband back in 1998. The Cedar Rapids Gazette used to have the strictly personal ads, and she responded to an ad that said, "Nice guy, educated, physically fit, Catholic, single white professional male, 29, is honest, intelligent, sincere, enjoys hiking, biking, theater, sporting events, movies, and conversation. If the above interests you, please reply." She says, so of course I had to call the number on the ad. We met at Barnes & Noble on February 16th, 1998. I almost walked out since I thought he saw me and wasn't interested, but decided to see if he was still there waiting for me at the entrance of the store. He was, and we chatted in the little cafe area for about 2 hours. I remember I told my sister and my best friend that if I didn't call them by 10 p.m., it probably worked out. And here we are today celebrating 19 years of marriage and 4 kids. Our first meeting anniversary will be on Sunday, 22 years of being together. And she says, you know, it's funny how the dating app thing is big now, but we did it back in 1998 with an ad in the newspaper. And I've also found, and that's such a great story, but several people have sent me similar stories privately. And I think that maybe there used to be a little bit of embarrassment about using a personal ad. But today there seems to be very little embarrassment about using these apps and these online tools.
Yeah, I think that's a really key shift. And I love that example because we also see how technology has always mattered. But the dominant technology of the time, you know, newspapers are sort of less dominant now. And so now we've moved online. But yeah, I think when the dominant mode of dating was meeting in person, meeting through friends or in a shared space like a school, then there was this idea that if you couldn't meet a partner in that way, you weren't doing it correctly, or there was some problem within you. There was this stigma around it. So yeah, I think it was still very common to meet in other ways, for example, personal ads, but it was also common to hide that. And that's been, I think, a key cultural shift with online dating and with dating apps, is that now that it is so common and so normative that I don't have the exact statistic, but I read that now new marriages, more people have met online who are getting married today than met other ways. So when something becomes the most common way to do something, I think that stigma falls away.
Absolutely. You can call and share your story, 866-780-9100. Polly is on the line from Indiana. Hi, Polly.
Hello.
Hi, what's your story?
Hello. Well, my husband and I met 43 years ago at a Dale Carnegie public speaking course. I was 18 and he was 26, and we had to give two speeches a week about personal things that happened in our lives. And being 18, I had nothing that happened in my life. So I always wanted to marry a farmer and always wanted to live on a farm. So I made up stories about my father was a dairy farmer and yada, yada, yada. Well, my husband was very interested in me, and we started dating, and eventually I had to come clean that I wasn't from the farm. I actually was from the town, suburbia, and he said, well, it didn't quite jive some of the things you were telling me. Like, you didn't know the difference between wheat and oats and things like that, and hence the conclusion of the story is we've been married 43 years.
Oh, Polly, what a great story. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Well, and just from an anthropological perspective, a key way we interact with other people is to make up stories about our own lives, right? We create the narratives about who we are, our identity in different contexts. And dating, I think, is really a key context for not only asserting who you are, but also reframing it, because it's a time of change and shift. So I think that's a great example of how dating can be part of this larger process of redefinition of yourself.
Absolutely. And Polly, how nervous were you when you had to tell him the truth?
Oh, my. Very, very nervous. And to say the least, I've had to pay for this story every time someone asks me, how did we meet? So it was my just punishment.
Well, 43 years is a pretty good track record. Polly, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. We're going to take a short break, but you can call and share your story as well. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're talking about dating through the years today with anthropologist Emily Wenzel of the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are celebrating Valentine's Day by talking about the evolution of dating through the decades, and we want to hear your stories. Maybe it's how you met your significant other. Maybe it's the worst date of your life. Maybe you're back on the dating market after being away for a while. Let us know what's going on with you, your best stories. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our guide this hour is Emily Wenzel. She's an associate professor of anthropology and the director of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences International Baccalaureate Program at the University of Iowa. And of course, asking someone out on a date is something that a lot of us feel very nervous about doing. And we're sharing some moments from popular culture this hour. This is a moment from Curb Your Enthusiasm when a newly single Larry David finds himself having to do the impossible, asking someone out on a date after not having been on one himself in over 10 years.
Look, I'm not a cool guy or anything, okay? I haven't been on a date in 12 years, but I would love to waste your time for a couple of hours. What do you think about that? Can I do that? Is that possible? How
okay.
about that?
Yeah. Well, you got my number.
I do. How are you?
Hi.
How you doing, man?
You know Lucy Lawless?
Yeah, we
Ted
met.
Ted Danson?
Yeah.
Nice to see you.
You too. Well, okay.
All right.
Hi.
What is that? Call me? Did she just do a call me?
Yeah, she did. We're going out to dinner.
Really?
Yes.
Well, good
yeah.
for you.
I asked her for a date. Here's what I said. I'm not really a cool guy or anything, which is a pretty good line, I thought. I never did that when I was dating. Admit that I wasn't a cool guy. I'm not a cool guy. I'm going to use it all the time.
Good for you, man.
Thank
really.
You.
Good for
Thank you.
You.
All right, Larry David asking out Lucy Lawless, which doesn't actually seem like a very good idea. Not because there's anything wrong with Larry. Lucy
high.
Lawless, right? Exactly. You can join our conversation, share your dating stories. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Hillary is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Hillary.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what's your story?
So,
Well, I'm actually calling from Iowa City, but I'm a born and raised Texan. I've been here for 2.5 years. My husband's from Iowa City, and we met in San Antonio playing volleyball. I played against him once, and he tore us up. And I said, I'm never playing against him again. And so the next week, I snuck myself onto his team, and we've been playing together ever since. We still play to this day, and that's our love language. On our wedding day, he told my mom, I'm an only child, that he would never move me from San Antonio. And obviously that didn't work out, but I'm so happy to live in Iowa City.
Well, Hillary, welcome to Iowa. That's, in some ways, that's almost an old fashioned way of meeting.
Oh, yes, it was. And yeah, and it was so much fun to kind of build our relationship through volleyball first and then go through our first dates. And, you know, it was perfect. And it was perfect for us.
Well, Hillary, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. You can share your story, 866-780-9100. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we were talking about how, of course, deciding that people should marry for love was a huge change in our culture, but also then the opportunity to have some privacy, that changed our culture. Something else that has really changed in recent decades is that people are waiting longer to get married or to find a life partner. That has to change how we meet people.
Absolutely. If you're getting married very young, you're probably meeting in school. For example, you have this ready-made set of peers. So I think that's also why things like online dating and apps have become so useful. Because if you're waiting until longer to get married, you might know your workmates. Maybe it's not a great idea to date in the office, although I'd love to hear stories about people who did. Please call in. But it becomes harder to sort of meet new friend groups, new people. So in the context of that demographic change, the apps also play an increasing role.
Here's a story from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. She says, my wife and I met via OkCupid back in 2007. Our match percentage was in the high 90s, so I looked at her profile and sent her the form letter I'd prepared for prospective matches. She responded, and we spoke for a few months online, and then we met, and here we are 13 years later, happily married and expanding our family. Back then, OkCupid was free, friendly to the LGBTQ community, and since it was internet-based, it was a safe place for geeks like us to find each other without fear of being followed back home or put at physical risk. Had it not been for that website, I guarantee I never would have found the love of my life, who at the time was in a different state. I am eternally grateful. And that brings up a really interesting point, because as you mentioned earlier, sometimes these technological ways of meeting each other, that creates a safe space for people who may be in a smaller pool of prospective mates.
Exactly. And at every point in history, including today, there have been people who have not been allowed to interact freely and who haven't been safe in public spaces, particularly expressing those romantic parts of their lives. So, for example, interracial marriage was illegal in many parts of the U.S. until the 1967 Loving versus Virginia Supreme Court decision. At that time, in 67, 3% of marriages in the U.S. were interracial. In 2015, 17% were across racial or ethnic groups. So we see sort of change there, but also increasingly, right, we have gay marriage is legal. That doesn't mean you still feel safe and comfortable in any part of the U.S. going on a date and holding hands in public. If you're a transgender or non-binary person, it might not be safe for you. So I think that story from that listener was really important for demonstrating how online dating and apps also can keep people safe in their intimate life from sort of the prying eyes of others.
Well, and it also gave her and her wife an opportunity to really get to know each other before the pressure of seeing each other in person, which is interesting because that almost takes us back to old-fashioned courting, where you didn't spend time alone together, but you explored each other's lives and talked about things. There was maybe more letter writing and more talking before people got physical.
It's true. And it just goes to show that in this idea of companionate love, there are so many in romantic love, so many different parts of it. There's the physical sexual part, but there's also the shared hobbies like volleyball, the shared interests like being a geek, I think that last writer in person said. So there's all this stuff that we're now supposed to get from our partner. And different kinds of dating can help you focus on different aspects of that ball of stuff. It's interesting in our society, it's proven very difficult to get all those things from one partner. So I think now there are increasing efforts for people to find non-romantic forms of dating dating. Even there are similar to dating, like online apps and sites for finding parent friends or finding non-sexual relationships. So I think this model of online dating we're now also extending to these other parts of our lives.
Interesting. Pat is on the line at 866-780-9100. Hello, Pat.
Yes.
Hi, what's your story?
Well, my husband and I met on a blind date through mutual work friends and got married 8 weeks later.
Wow.
People said it wouldn't last. And we've been married 47 years.
Wow. Pat, congratulations. Yeah. So do you remember what made your friends want to set the two of you up?
I guess they thought we would like each other.
And I guess you did. What did you do on that first date?
We went out to dinner and talked a lot.
And 8 weeks later, you got married. Was it kind of an instant connection for the two of you?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a good time. I think we closed the restaurant down. I think that dinner must have lasted about 4 or 5 hours, I think, you know.
Oh, that's but wonderful.
But it was pretty great. And I had stood her up.
Oh.
A couple of months before, we were going to go out, and something happened in the meantime, and I didn't show up. And I had to beg my way back into this relationship. I really did. So. It worked out.
Well, Pat, how did you forgive him for standing you up that first time?
I don't think she has.
I gave him a bad time about that for a while.
Yeah.
Well,
and he denied that it really was a stand up. He would say, no, that really wasn't, but yeah, it was.
Well, thank you both for calling and sharing your story. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at iowapublicradio.org. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio. And I'm sorry, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'll finish my email address there. And, you know, some people have a real knack for setting people up. Some people are not very good at it. But that is something that people still look for sometimes when they're having a hard time finding somebody. They still look for a matchmaker. They'll ask friends or even hire somebody.
It's true. And I think the idea is that your friend can vet the person, and if they know you and they're not going to set you up with anyone you would find completely distasteful, that often seems to fail. I think that's if we can have callers with that genre of stories, the terrible fix-up is, I think, a delightful genre of stories. It just goes to show how so many factors are involved in choosing a romantic partner that you might be compatible on one aspect, but woefully incompatible on others.
Here's another story about the personal ads. This is from Matt in Iowa City. He said that he and his wife met in a transitional liminal tech phase. It was in late 1999. She put an ad in the city pages in Minneapolis. That's in the personals. But she had marked it for online only, thinking that that would filter out the Luddites. He said, I saw the ad in the print edition of the city pages. Surprise, early tech didn't work as promised. Good thing for me. He said, I saw the ad. And I used to read those ads because they made me laugh. Then I saw Pam's and felt I had to follow up. I had to call a number and leave a message that she would listen to. And he says, I think I was the only one that didn't sound drunk or talk about going through a divorce on their message. He said that was the start of it. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your story. Or you can send it to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Brian is on the line next in Clive. Hi, Brian.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What's your story? This isn't about you. This is about your grandparents, right?
Yeah, I thought I would share this story. It's one that's been passed down, has a little tragedy, very, very romantic as well. But so it was my grandpa was in World War II, and so he was overseas, and he was a lonely soldier, so he sent a letter to the Tama newspaper, and I don't know if it was an editorial or something, but it said something to the effect that he was a lonely soldier. He had nobody to write to him. Would somebody please write to him? And at the same time, around that time, my grandmother had been married, and her husband, unfortunately, had backed over in a car their two-year-old child, and he couldn't deal with the tragedy, and he ended up committing suicide, so she found herself as a widower. So she wrote to this soldier, and they corresponded until he came back to the States, and they ended up getting married, and were married for over 50 years.
Wow. What an incredible story, yeah. Brian.
Well, and I think that's really a telling example of using romance and dating to sort of reframe your life after a horrible, horrible tragedy like that, that someone would sort of try to keep going and reach out in these new ways to new people, that dating can fulfill that role. Wow, that's a really moving story.
Yeah. Brian, that should be turned into a movie, I think. Thanks so much.
I've always thought that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think her intent was to find a replacement. It was just she was lonely, you know, and dealing with that tragedy. And
two lonely hearts reaching out to each other. Yeah.
Right. Well, okay. Well, I just wanted to share.
Thank you so much. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Jessica's on the line. And Jessup. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Hi, what's your story?
Well, my husband and I met in 2009 at the fireworks through mutual friends on the 4th of July. And so we always like to joke that, you know, there were fireworks that night. but the story I wanted to tell was about 2 weeks after we started dating, there was an engagement party I wanted to go to. And I was really scared to ask my boyfriend at the time, and my friend knew that I was going to ask him and had already told him. And so when I finally asked, he said, yes, I'll go with you, but on one condition, you have to let me tell everyone that we met on Craigslist. And I didn't know really anything about Craigslist at the time, so I was like, sure. And so he just thought that was so funny that I agreed to that. But the joke kind of ended up being on him because when we got to the engagement party, he went to tell the groom, you know, how we met, and that we met on Craigslist. But he was from Mexico, so he didn't know what Craigslist was either. So he didn't really get to land the joke very well. But he likes to tell everyone still.
So he thought it would be a more interesting story than meeting at fireworks?
Yeah, I think because he just thought, you know, that's kind of silly to meet on Craigslist. So, yes.
Well, I think that's a great example of what we were talking about, how online dating used to be more stigmatized, and particularly Craigslist, that I used to love to read that misconnection section. Yeah. I think, Craigslist was sort of famous for being the more risque online dating when it was first a new technology. So that's funny that he was sort of trying to make a potentially tense situation a little lighter by making this joke about technology and stigma and dating that then didn't land.
Jessica, thank you so much for calling. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's another story out of Iowa City. After my divorce, I was looking for a partner outside my social and work network. It had been 20 years since I had dated, and I knew it would be hard to meet new people, especially as an introvert. I ended up meeting my husband using an online dating app. It worked for me. And that's an interesting thing, too, because a lot of us do meet our spouses or our significant others because we come into contact them. You know, people used to often meet through school and then through work, although workplace dating, as you mentioned, is not always a great idea. So getting outside that circle can be really challenging.
It's true. And there are, I think, ways people do it that are still mediated by technology, but meetup groups, I think that's always the advice for people. If you move to a new place, join some meetup groups, meet some people, go to clubs for whatever you like. But yeah, online spaces are really, I think, the predominant spaces where now we meet people. Because in just your daily life, if you're busy with work, maybe with kids, with school, with whatever, people don't have as much time for hobbies right now.
Bev says, all I can say is thank goodness I'm not navigating my love life through social media. She says, I met my hubby the old-fashioned way at a company picnic 40 years ago. This is from Steve. He says, I met my eventual spouse, Mary, on Valentine's Day or thereabouts in 2000 on some dating service. We don't remember which one. We didn't meet in person until late April of that year. And during that time, we dated via computer, eventually by phone. Via phone and email, we discussed the usual things, especially our love of the arts, animals, our children, and progressive Christianity. Before we ever met in person, she was my chief friend and consoler when my father passed away that spring in Western Nebraska, and they're still together today, now in the same place, although temporarily navigating a distance relationship again while she's in an artist in residence position. But we will be back with more stories in a moment. We're celebrating Valentine's Day today with your stories at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, anthropologist Emily Wenzel of the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are exploring the evolution of dating through the decades, and we'd love to hear your stories, how you met your significant other, your worst date ever, what it's like to be back on the dating scene if you've been away for a while, or embracing technology and dating. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're sharing some moments in popular culture that, of course, they're all uncomfortable dating stories because that's what we like to see in popular culture, right? We've all been there at some point or another. This is a moment from the second season of Parks and Recreation, the sitcom, where Leslie Knope prepares for a date. After a while, out of the game, she consults her friend Anne for some advice.
Hey, while I have you, can I ask you a question?
Shoot.
What if he asked me if I've been married?
Have you?
No.
Well, then say that.
But then he'll wonder why I haven't been married. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna say that I was married. The real question is, should I say that I have kids? Guys like girls that have kids, right?
Whoa.
What if I get drunk and I talk about Darfur too much? Or not enough? What if I don't bring up Darfur enough?
Leslie, relax.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just have a few more questions for you, Anne. What if he shows up with another woman? What if one of my sleeves catches on fire and it spreads rapidly? What if, instead of Tic Tacs, I accidentally pop a couple of Ambien and I have to keep punching my leg to stay awake?
Those are all insane hypotheticals, and I promise you they won't happen.
They have happened. All of these have happened to me.
All right. Getting ready for a date on Parks and Recreation. With me this hour is Emily Wenzel, Associate Professor of Anthropology and the Director of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences International Baccalaureate Program at the University of Iowa. She is our guide through dating through the decades. And you can join us, 866-780-9100. Dan is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
I'm good. And you have a failed date story for us. Tell us about it.
Yeah, they don't always work out. So when I was at the University of Iowa between 2000 and 2004, I was in a pretty serious relationship for the first 3 years. But after that ended, my fraternity brothers thought it would be fun to sign me up for the local, like, college radio show's dating game. So the local radio show did this. It was like a one night only dating game where they brought in two bachelors, put them behind a sheet, and then the bachelorette got to ask us questions, or the woman got to ask the men questions and then choose one of us. And then we got to go on a date paid for by the radio station. And so this woman was, I ended up finding out later, she was at the School of Beauty there in Iowa City. And she asked a question about how often we wash our hair. And so I answered, my mom's a beautician, so I answered, oh, I only wash it every other day because you've got to keep the natural oils in there. And that's, I think neither one of us were on her radar before that question. And she chose me. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool, I guess.
For your beauty knowledge.
Anyways,
great.
The radio,
yeah.
For my beauty knowledge. Anyways, the radio station paid for us to go on a date. It was kind of awkward. I mean, we had only met via radio, basically. We quickly kind of realized that we weren't compatible, but we were going to have fun anyways, and, you know, go out to a nice dinner, and she got flowers and chocolates from the radio station. We went to a house party after the date, and it was at my house, and my roommate was like, oh, what are you doing with my cousin? And so we ended up finding out that she was my roommate's cousin. We were not compatible, but it was just a fun experiment, you know, to have the radio station pay for us to go on a date and to be able to tell a story later. And it certainly did not work out between the two of us, but it was fun. And back in 2004, we didn't have all these dating sites. So radio stations and newspapers were the way to do it, I guess.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for sharing that story. And now that's interesting because I've been playing moments from popular culture. We love to see stories about dating, but we also love reality shows about dating. And I mean, Dan's example of that radio show is it's like an early version maybe of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. We love to watch these shows. We love to date vicariously through other people.
It's true. This has been a genre of radio and then of television really since the inception of television.
Yeah.
So it's both reflecting societal changes. What do we make of these new forms of dating? And also teaching us how to do them, right? It's also teaching us things about what is normative in terms of gender, sexuality, how we present ourselves. We see ones that we learn from and we see ones we love to hate. I don't think anyone is doing rose ceremonies at home.
I hope not.
call in. Please
right.
call in if you are.
I want to hear that story.
So I think that also, though, reflects some fears about dating, especially in the internet age where someone can be dating multiple people without you knowing it, right? Are you just one of this massive crowd trying to get the metaphorical rose? So I think we see both our hopes and fears and new innovations in dating playing out in the media like that. That was a great caller.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's it also thinking about popular culture, there are all these stories told of love at first sight, and not all of us go on a blind date and get married for, you know, 8 weeks later for 47 years. That's almost a love at first sight story. But I feel like there's a lot of pressure for people to feel that connection right away. And if they don't feel that connection right away, then maybe that's not a relationship worth pursuing, which can lead us down some wrong paths, I think.
That's true. And that does get back to our fundamental ideas culturally about what dating is or should be, right? If you're in this dating model of romantic marriage, yeah, there's this idea of like the meet cute from romantic comedy. Whereas if you're going for arranged marriage, there is the idea that that comes later and grows out of compatibility. So I think different people in our culture are having a different order of operations about what comes first.
Absolutely. Joe is on the line next in West Des Moines. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your story?
Well, in terms of catastrophes, with apologies to Dan, I think I can one-up him. When I was a young newspaper reporter up in Mason City, the first person I asked out when I moved up there was a woman named Jane, and our second date was 5 years later. So needless to say, our first date didn't work out so well. We've now been married 35 years and have 6 children and 2 grandchildren. But the first date was pretty much a catastrophe.
What was so bad about it, Joe? Do you remember?
Well, it was... I invited, being a newspaper reporter, I went to the courthouse every day, and she was deputy clerk of court. And so I asked her out, and I was new in town, so of course she didn't really know me. And I invited her to dinner and a movie. And then when I got home that day, my refrigerator had quit during the day, and everything in the freezer was melted. So when I picked her up, first I was late because I had to clean up my kitchen, and secondly, I said to her, I hope you don't mind, I'm going to cook for you because I have all this food that has thawed that I don't want to go to waste. And so now she's at a stranger's house being cooked a really terrible dinner. And then when I went to take her home, it was very cold outside and my car wouldn't start. So
oh, no.
I told her, don't worry. I've got friends at the newspaper that are working tonight. I'll just call over there and one of them can give us a ride. So we went back in my house and I picked up the phone and the phone was dead. So at that point, I think she was genuinely starting to worry that she was in some kind of bad horror movie.
Yeah.
So by the time I got her back to her apartment, I got a handshake at the door. I went down to my car and I had a flat tire.
It was a cursed date. It wasn't just a catastrophe.
Yeah, all true. And then, of course, being a newspaper reporter, I guess I shouldn't say of course, but we had the opportunity in those days to write personal columns in the paper. So, you know, what's a young single guy do when he has a catastrophic date? He goes back and writes about it in the newspaper.
Oh.
yeah, I didn't use her name, but I did tell the story, and people got a chuckle out of it, but we didn't go out again for 5 years. So.
Oh, Joe, that's a fantastic story. I'm glad you got to be friends and it worked out later. But I'm sure you've gotten a lot of mileage out of that story over the years.
Yeah, I'm an author now. I wanted to go around and do author talks. I often talk about that in the context of this personal column that I was writing in those days. And audiences seem to enjoy laughing at my expense.
Well, we're enjoying it too, yeah. Joe. Happy Valentine's Day. Thank you so much for your call. This is a great comment from Lindsay in Des Moines. She says, this is my internet dating story. In the fall of 2016, I saw a guy I had a crush on post this photo. It says, wanted female juggler, clubs, rings, and balls. And then she put a comment on the story saying, I'm learning how to juggle. I just got a 3-ball cascade down. She just wanted to connect. She says, if you see my comment that I did not, in fact, have a 3-ball cascade down, I posted this comment and then immediately ordered juggling balls. I frantically taught myself how to juggle over the course of the next several months so that the next time I saw him, I'd be able to do at least the most basic juggling pattern with the balls. We proceeded to talk about juggling for the next 3 years online through Facebook. He would send me video tutorials for tricks he knew that I didn't. This went on until late in the summer of 2019 when he moved to Iowa from Minneapolis so we could date and juggle together. On Valentine's this year, we are heading to a juggling festival in Minneapolis together. I stand by my views that social media is evil, but I do thank Facebook Messenger for helping make communication easier for this specific relationship. And she says, in my defense, I do now juggle clubs, balls, and rings.
So sometimes you learn a new skill through dating.
Right? Absolutely. All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Dan, another Dan on the line in Iowa City, whose parents met in the way that we're all told never to meet. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hi. Tell us your parents' story.
I'm using my folks' story here because it's just so sweet and warming. But yeah, back in the era of the 70s, late 60s, early 70s there, my pa was right out of the Army and had a commune up in Canada, and he thought he'd go visit a buddy in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Well,
he never made it.
He got picked up in Burlington, Iowa, and they ended up riding in the car for 30 minutes down the road to Mount Pleasant, and he just ended up never leaving, and they've been together for just about 50 years now, about 48 years. So
your mom picked him up when he was hitchhiking, and then he just stayed with her?
Yeah. He just kind of felt at home, and they just didn't stop talking, and hasn't. My dad's a talker, so he's got plenty of mileage out of that, just about with his thumb too, about 30,000 miles on it back in that day. But it worked out, and they also owned and operated their own business after they got married in, I think, 8 months. So they owned and operated their own business, so not only lived, they worked full time together. And it's odd not to see them together outside of work, outside of that. So they joke they've been married 3 times as long as anyone else, just with a full-time job together. They live 50 feet from the shop, from the work, so they're always working and always side by side.
Oh, wow, Dan, that is an amazing story. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I have to say, don't try it at home, but for safety's sake.
We're talking about changing times.
Right,
yeah, we don't
exactly.
Hitchhike as much anymore.
All right, Marvin's on the line next in Newton. Hi, Marvin.
Hi, I really appreciate this call opportunity. I'm going to put an international spin on this love story. The gentleman, Dan, before talked about the miles. Well, I Well, I'm still doing unpaid volunteer work in Ukraine. I helped create Iowa Sister City, Newton Sister City, and Iowa Sister State Organization. And we're the only state that has a sister state relationship with a state or oblast in Ukraine. So I went over there up to date. I've been there 29 times, and I pay for my own way, basically living on Social Security. But I'm having the time of my life, I'm telling you. So I was married for 40 years plus, but it just, after a while, I said to my wife, we're living too long. You know, we're going different directions. So we had a good divorce. And so then when I went to Ukraine, being a man, I kept thinking, oh, gosh, would it be possible to find an everlasting love? Well, it took several trips, but I met this young lady at a traffic light in our sister state, and the name of the sister city in, or the city in that state, the same, Cherkasy. And the light was red, and this young lady came up with her daughter beside me, and I looked at that light and I said, "Oh my God, don't turn green yet. Don't turn green yet. I got to think how I can introduce myself to this young lady." Long story short, I did. We eventually started communicating, and this was back in the year 2000, and it was kind of a primitive way with the computer and that. But anyway, I fell in love with her. To this day, I still love her. See, I found my everlasting love.
At a stoplight. Wow, Marvin, that's really an incredible story. We're nearly out of time. I want to share this story from Roxy. She says, my husband and I went to the same high school. He was 2 years older than I was. At the time, I was dating one of the other guys on the soccer team he played on, so I knew about him and who he was through that and going to the games. A couple years after graduating, I found him on MySpace, so you can tell how old this is, and that's kind of how we met, at least again. The first time we went out, I took him bowling. At the time, he was working really weird hours, so he was up early and working late nights, so he was super tired. We went back to my sister's and were watching a show. He'd fallen asleep, and next to him was a bag of chips that we were snacking on, and he's laid back asleep. Then he woke up and just started eating the chips. I started laughing, and that's kind of how it all started. Here we are 14 years later and 5 beautiful kids and still going. Oh. Well, thank you to everybody who shared stories with us today. And I guess it just underlines there are so many different ways to find love.
Can I just do a Valentine's Day shout out to my husband, who I met when he fixed my cable?
Nice. Yeah. Very nice. It's good to have someone handy. Emily Wenzel, thank you so much for being here today. Emily Wenzel is an associate professor of anthropology and the director of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences International Baccalaureate Program at the University of Iowa. Have a very happy Valentine's Day, everyone. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Might never be mean. Might never be cross or try to be boss, but they wouldn't do for nobody else. Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you, wonderful you. It had to be you.